I'm not feeling overly great myself, so if I have to like hack up a lung or something, that's why. Just give you plenty of warning. I'd like to open with prayer, and then we'll get started with the text today that we're going to work through. Lord, I thank you so much for this day. And Lord, I thank you for what you're doing around the world in both our own backyard and also in other countries. And Lord, we know that you are the God who is the center of it all. And Lord, may we as your people put ourselves right alongside you and to see where you're working and throw ourselves into that. And Lord, as we study your word today and as I speak, Lord, I just pray that you would give me strength in my voice and anything that I would say that would not be glorifying to you. Then Lord, I just ask that you would take it. And Lord, may we be challenged to think differently about our lives, and may we be challenged to think differently about our own weaknesses, our own frailties. And Lord, I thank you again for this opportunity and pray, Lord, that you would meet us here today. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, I titled the sermon Security, Significance, and Weakness, because I think those are just different issues that we deal with on a fairly regular basis. Probably about 5 years ago, I heard a sermon by John Piper. He started a sermon with what I'm going to start it with, basically. He said, "We are all desperately insecure." And that just kind of hit me. We are all desperately insecure. Not some of us are desperately insecure. And even the word desperately, I mean, that carries quite a lot of weight. And as soon as he said it, I thought, you know what? That's exactly right. And I could remember a time when that realization hit me. It's probably around freshman year of high school, and I had a bad hair day. You know, I go to school, try to not show off my bad hair day. And as I went through my bad hair day, no one noticed that I had a bad hair day. That pretty much, in my opinion, bad hair days are all in your own mind because everybody else is too busy worrying about their bad hair day to recognize if you're having one. And so this idea of being desperately insecure, I think is true. We all have within us this need, this desire, this want to have significance, to have worth, to have a feeling of I've got something, that people want me. And I think that, in a sense, drives a lot of what we do. And I think that drive started in the Garden of Eden. God created us with an eternal capacity, a need for significance and value and worth. Unfortunately, at the fall of mankind, that was broken. And from that point, I think we see right away, we see that there was a break in that decision of saying, I need significance. Because up until that point, God was the one who provided that for them. He was the only infinite source who could fill them up, and he filled them up perfectly. But upon that, immediately their relationship was broken. And you can see that with their hiding from God right away, and also that they decided to go with the designer fig leaf approach now that they are no longer able to be totally open with each other even. They have to hide themselves. They have to put something up to separate them in order to kind of keep who they really are a secret, that they no longer had the security that they once had in God. And their significance was broken. Their significance was lost. And I think we hide behind a lot of stuff. You know, obviously, ever since the fall, we all wear clothes. Most of the time, that's a good thing, especially where we live when it's cold outside. But we hide behind all kinds of different things. We hide behind money. We hide behind power. We hide behind our personal appearance, success, popularity, family, influence. And in all these things, we are, I think, desperately trying to feel secure, desperately trying to find the answer to, do I have value? Do I have worth? And we have a tendency to evaluate not based on what God says, but based on what I see in relationships with other people. And so with the 10th graders, a couple, I don't know, maybe a week and a half ago, we talked about this thing called a lifeboat. And it's like one of those philosophical enigmas that no one can ever answer. But let's say we have a lifeboat. You have five people in the lifeboat, but the lifeboat could only hold four. You know, it's one of those scenarios. And so you have the crippled kid, you got the doctor, you got the lawyer, the trash man, and then you have, you know, a stay-at-home mom with five kids or something. And then you have to decide, which one do you eliminate? And so we went through the whole thing, and my answer was the one that was least accepted, because I said, practically speaking, you want to get rid of the one who's not going to help you the most. So chuck the crippled kid overboard. Didn't get a good response. But the whole point behind this thing is to... She's shaking her head. Not a good sign. The whole point behind this is we have a tendency to value people based on what we think of them, on who they are, what they do, how many people depend on them, rather than thinking, isn't it in essence we all are eternally valuable to God? But yet, because our significance has been broken between God and us, we have a tendency to evaluate my significance based on what I see around me. And so I compare myself to others, and I find my worth based on other people, on what they do or what they think of me. And in essence, we need to be appreciated. God built that into us. But we find that when we have that broken relationship, it's different now. And so this is going to lead us to something. This leads to two kind of extreme ways of looking at life. We have in one element where we try to boast about the things that we have going for us. I want you to know about all the good things that I do so that you will value me. And I kind of emphasize all these things. And I try to downplay and hide and keep my weaknesses far, far away so that you don't know the real me. And so we have these two things going on. My weaknesses, my frailties, my trials, I try to stash. And the things that are going good for me, at least in my eyes, what you guys would value and appreciate, I try to lift up. And I boast about those things. But there's a fundamental flaw in that. And that fundamental flaw is, what are we boasting in? And in today's text, we're going to be looking at 1 Corinthians 1. Before I get into that, I'd like to read a definition from Webster. He says this: boasting is to talk about oneself with too much pride, to brag about. And the last three words that he said in this, to glory in. To glory in myself, to glory in my own ability. And in essence, we all do that. Now, some of us kind of have a tendency to extremely focus on the things that are good. And those are the people you see walking in the door because their heads can't quite fit. You know, they kind of have to turn it because their heads are so big about themselves. And then you have the other kind, the people who are so focused on themselves and their weaknesses, their frailties, their trials, that they have like this image of, I don't want anything to do with life. I'm terrible. No one could ever possibly like me if they knew the real me. And God's going to say there's a balance here. There's a balance. When we think about the boasting, we have to keep in mind that we're all one car wreck away from losing everything we could possibly boast in. Our health, our looks, our minds, our jobs, whatever it is. One car wreck away. And as far as the low points, God's going to say, whose opinion of you really matters the most? Who values you the most and why? And so we're going to take a look at the Corinthian church, and they're going to be like notorious for being a church who had a tendency to mix the world with God and try to come up with some kind of hybrid that works for them. Because they're going to say, the whole first part of the chapter is they're boasting in all kinds of things. I'm apostle of Paul. I'm a disciple of Paul. I'm a disciple of Apollos. Then they've got the really spiritual ones that say, I'm a disciple of Jesus. And Paul's going to say, what's the focal point here? It's not who you know in a sense of who you're connected to on this earth. It's who you know in heaven. And so the Corinthians had a tendency to focus on their abilities and their boasting in themselves. And Paul's going to basically raise answers to three questions that I think we fundamentally ask, and this is kind of going to serve as our outline for this sermon. First off, what do I do about my insecurities, my weaknesses, my trials, my suffering? What do I do about those things? The second question he's going to bring up is, what does God do with my insecurities, my trials, my suffering? And the third point is, what does God want to teach me from my insecurity, my weaknesses, and my trials? And these three things are going to kind of show themselves. We're going to be primarily in 1 Corinthians 1, but then we're going to flip over to 2 Corinthians 12 near the end. The first point says, what do I do about my insecurities, my weaknesses, and trials? And I'd like to start with chapter 1, verse 26, and we'll read read to the conclusion of chapter 1. So starting with verse 26. Brothers, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God, that is, our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let him who boasts, boasts in the Lord. So this first question, what do I do about my insecurities? I think Paul kind of goes right back to the very beginning. He says, brothers, think of what you were when you were called. He says, reflect on what you were. Reflect back before God came to you. What were you then? And he says, basically, most of you were nobodies. I look at my own life, big nobody right up here. You can see it in 2 seconds. He says, look back to what you were before God even came to you. Did you have anything to give him then? Because he's going to have a fundamental answer to this thinking of, to think about yourself correctly, you want to think of yourself in light of a bigger picture than just the here and now. I had a professor, his name was Dr. Sauer, he taught us Greek. He was from the deep south, like Alabama deep south. And he was like, you know, trained in London, England, Cambridge. And so he had this huge education going behind him, but he also had the accent. And so anytime he corrected you, you were just like, man. And he always had a tendency to call you by your first initial and your middle name. So he would correct you, and he wasn't one of those teachers that's like, oh, you know, that was a good attempt. Nice try. A little off. He was like, no, that is incorrect. Now, Z. James, I want you to look back in lesson 19 to parse this verb. Now, look back. And then, you know, the whole class is like looking at you, and you're kind of like, you know, fumbling through your notes trying to get to lesson 19. Then he would say, after giving it a mature thought, would you like to change your answer? Which basically always meant, yes, I want to change my answer, because whatever my answer was obviously was not even close to the right one. So you look back and he would say, take a mature look at your past. Basically, look back in order to make a decision now. That the past and reflecting on the past is an incredibly important thing when thinking about events now. And so he's going to tell the Corinthian church, reflect on your past. You think you want to boast in something? You want to boast in who you know, your wealth, your influence? Look back before. And then basically here's his point. He says, even by the qualities we have a tendency to judge each other by, he says most of you didn't have any of those things going for you. He says most of you were not politically connected. None of you were born of noble birth. He says not many of you were wise by the world. You were not in the intellectual elite. He says not many of you were powerful or influential. You had nothing going for you before you came to know God. And so he says, why now do you have a tendency to want to do that? And it's funny, even though in essence I know in my mind anyway that there's nothing in me that God would necessarily want. And I know that when God moved in my life and called me to himself, that things in my life fundamentally changed. But isn't it funny that even though God is now the center, or hopefully the center of my life and what I'm trying to pursue, we still fight with these ideas of I want value from others. I want to boast in something. And even though I know God is the only one worth boasting in, these Christians, and I think us, if we were honest with ourselves, still want that kind of approval, that appreciation. We still need others to say there's something in you that's good. And in essence, he's saying, I want you to think back to what you were. Most of you were nothing. I'm going to list off three professions, and just to remind us that this idea of wealth and power and physical abilities still are very, very highly esteemed in our culture. You know, if I list off, say, a basketball player, how many names come to your mind right away of famous basketball players? If I list off presidents, how many of you can think of several presidents immediately? If I list CEOs, most of you can come up with at least Donald Trump, you know, or Bill Gates. But now if I list off another set of positions, say, for example, a janitor, trash collector, a taxi driver, can we think of any names for people like that? And he's going to say, God is going to say, I have chosen the taxi drivers, the janitors, the garbage men of this world to show my glory to them in order that they may show glory to all around them. Not their glory, but my glory. And he's going to say, if you had nothing before to give to God, what makes you think you now have something that's somehow going to give you value? It's God's choice to pick you. He says, I chose you when you were a nothing foolish person, a weak person. And at that point, I showed the world something amazing through you. And we so quickly lose sight of that. We so quickly want to boast in our own abilities and hide our weaknesses. And God is saying, I chose you in your weakness to use your weakness to reach the world. And so it sounds crazy, but so often I find myself saying, okay, God, I know I'm valuable to you, but that's not enough. I want something more. And that's like a crazy thought, but yet we have it all the time. So he's going to say, first off, you need to put God in the center of how you think of yourself. You want to make sure that you reflect back on your past, look at what you were when God picked you, and realize there's nothing you can do to make God more happy with you in a sense of getting more value from your own life. Now, there's definitely things that he is displeased with and more pleased with the way we live, but you and yourself are infinitely valuable to him, and he picked you in your weakest state in order to show himself. So that's his first point in verse 26. He's going to move on to say, what does God do with my insecurities? What does he do with my weaknesses, my trials? And he's going to say he glorifies himself through it. Somehow, in our weakness, he glorifies himself more through our weakness than through the strong. So God takes the weak nobodies, some of the words that he chooses. He says, for God chose the foolish things. God chose the weak things. He chose the lowly things, the despised things, the things that are not. And these two words, despised and things that are not, are pretty strong words. He's basically saying, in this culture, this was like one of the worst insults, was to look at somebody and say, in your being, you have no value. You are a nothing. You are a non-entity. And most of those words were only used for slaves. And so he's saying, God took the things that everyone else considered a nothing, and he picked them up and used them powerfully. Because when you are filled with nothing, when you have nothing inside of you, only then can you be filled with something infinitely valuable, and that's God's presence. When you yourself have nothing, God then can pour himself into you and his light can shine all the more brightly through it. So he takes nothing and demonstrates to the world that weakness is the perfect climate for God's power to be shown. And why he works that way in order, I think, again, is to show his glory. That if he took a strong person and did strong things with them, we might think it's the strong person doing these things. But if he takes a weak person and does powerful things, then we can't get confused. We can't think that this six-year-old did this amazing thing. We have to realize it was God who did this amazing thing. So I have four batteries here, different sizes. And as I was looking at these four batteries, it reminded me when I was little. When I was little, batteries were like somehow a tragic thing. I'm not exactly sure. You know, you get a toy that involves batteries, and you get like two batteries to put in your toy. And suddenly, it's kind of sad because no matter what, no matter how conservative you are with these batteries, you know, one thing very true is going to happen. Sooner or later, the battery is going to run out of energy and your remote control car or whatever it is going to stop working. And I think in essence, God has said, I have created you with an infinite capacity. I don't think I'm going to be able to balance this. I've created you with the ability to receive an infinite amount of energy. But yet we often try to operate our lives like batteries. And if you notice, there's different sizes here. Now, this battery is a D cell. This is a AAA. You know how much volts come out of each of these? The same. 1.5 volts come out of each. Now, this one may last a little longer. It may be able to push out a little more currency. But at the end of the day, this one's going to run out. This one's going to run out. And so I think throughout life, we have a tendency to kind of walk around to each other saying, fill me up. And we end up draining each other, trying to feel good about ourselves. And God is saying it the whole time. You trying to power your life with your own energy is like trying to power a light with this light bulb, with this battery. Eventually, it's going to run out. It's not going to last. It wasn't meant to last. It's temporary. And our lives are temporary, but at the same time, God said, I have created in you the ability to receive an infinite amount of power source. I've created, in a sense, you to be able to withstand the Hoover Dam. God said, I am the energy that can do anything. I can do anything through you. But as long as you try to power your own life with your own energy, I won't do anything with you. I want you to totally be recognizing that you are nothing. You have nothing to boast in yourself. And then you will recognize the power that's available. The Hoover Dam produces 2,000 or can produce 2,074 megawatts of energy. Now, if you're like me, a megawatt means practically nothing. What's a megawatt do? But here's like a basic analysis here. If you took 10,100-watt light bulbs, it would take 1 megawatt to power 10,100-watt light bulbs. Another way to look at it would be the entire country of Zimbabwe in 1998 took about 959 megawatts to power that country in 1998. So the Hoover Dam has way more power than we would ever possibly imagine using. And God is saying, I am that power. And I have created within you the ability to, in a sense, take some of that glory and shine it out. Not for your own glory, but for mine. And so some of us are AAA batteries. And God is saying, through the AAAs, I show the world my glory. Sometimes not through the D-cell, because the D-cell thinks they have something going for them. Wisdom, money, popularity, looks, something. And they think I can do this. And they may be able to last a little longer than, say, a AAA. But God says, when I take a AAA and change the world and light up the world, people notice. And they know it's not the AAA doing it. They know it's God doing it. And so he's saying, I want to use you, but I want to use those of you who are broken and recognize that you're nothing. And when that happens, the world is a totally changed place. And so we try to drain others to receive energy for ourselves, and God is saying there's a better way. I created you with the need for eternal power. I created you with the need for eternal significance and value, but you can't get it from other batteries. You have to get it from me, only from me. And yet we sometimes lose sight of that. We get blind to that. So he says, he chose the lowly things of this world to nullify the things that are, in order that no one may boast before him, that it won't be because I'm a D-cell battery that you changed the world. It will be only because of God. And he says, you have received so many things worth boasting in, not in yourself. Notice the things he says, though. He says, it is because of him that you are in Christ, who has become for us the wisdom of God. That is our redemption, our holiness and redemption. All those things God has put in us. And those are the things we are to boast in, that we may not boast in ourselves, boast in our strengths, or hide from our weaknesses, but boast solely and totally in God. And so Paul says, reflect, think back, but recognize ultimately that is God choosing you when you had nothing to give him, and now that you might have something in you, that it's still not you, it's still him. And so Moses is going to spend 40 years of his life thinking he's a somebody, 40 years of his life thinking he's a nobody, and the last 40 years of his life realizing what God can do with a nobody, that he can change the world through a nobody. You know, a guy who stutters and wanders around in the desert at 80 years old. He can take that guy and form a nation and change the world. He can take somebody who's weak and broken, like you, like me, and he can change the world. Because he's in the business of taking broken people, not for themselves to receive glory or to boast in themselves, but to take broken people in order to reflect back to him, that he may receive the glory, that he may look at you and say, that's my child. And people may look at you and say, there's something in that person that I know is not them. There's something in that person that has to be God. And when that happens, God receives the glory. And that's the reason why he takes broken people and takes the nothings of this world. And why the people who have something have the hardest time coming to Christ. God says, or Jesus will tell people, that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to come to heaven. Not because the rich man is somehow, you know, dumber or something. He has more things he thinks can get him there. The person who's totally blind and poor and full of leprosy, those people knew they had nothing. And that's the one God is going to reach down and touch. So the first part of 1 Corinthians here, he's saying, don't boast in who you think you are. Boast in God. But now he's going to kind of move, and now we want to flip over to 2 Corinthians 12. He's going to kind of change gears. Same church, a few years later, talking a lot about his own life, a lot about himself. And he's going to now raise the question, what does God want to teach me for my insecurities, my weaknesses, my fears? If I'm not to boast in my own strength, that's supposed to be all for God's glory. What do I do about the things in my life that I don't want anyone else to know about? The things in my life that are weak, the things that I'm not proud of, the things I wish I could change. What do I do about those things? So in chapter 12 of 2 Corinthians, we're going to start with verse 7. He's just got done talking about how he received this wonderful vision of heaven and had this great thing going for him. And now he's going to say, to keep me from becoming conceited, because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecution, in difficulties. And notice this last part, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Again, that idea of God filling up the weak parts in us, not for us, but for the world to see him in it, and for us to see him in it as well. So Paul's going to say it's much more than just refocusing my mind on understanding my weaknesses and my strengths. It's much more than that. There's a lesson that he wants to teach you personally through your weaknesses, through the trials and the sufferings that you experience. It's those very things that we try to hide from that God says, those are the things that I'm going to do the most good through. Lots of times it's not through your strengths that he's going to reach people for the kingdom. It's going to be through your weaknesses, through your trials, through the addictions that you've fought and fought and fought over. It's those things that God says, I will use. So he's going to talk about a specific weakness, a specific trial, and a point of suffering that he's going to call a thorn. And so this first message that God is going to give him in response to this question of, what does God want to teach me from my insecurity and my weaknesses, my trials? I'm going to call the message of the thorns. Because this particular thorn, whatever it was, is going to be a message to him that he's going to hear loud and clear. One thing I love about Paul, though, he does not tell us what that thorn was. He doesn't say it was this ailment or it was this trial or persecution or people chasing me or this, you know, temptation I kept fighting against. He doesn't tell us what it is, because I think in essence he wants to leave it vague on purpose, because I think if he told us what it was, we might think, oh, well, I don't have that ailment. Therefore, this whole passage is irrelevant to me. It doesn't affect me. So what I want us to do is take our personal thorn, our personal weakness, the things that we don't like in our lives, and put it in place of the one he's talking about. So a couple ideas of what it could possibly be. It could be a physical ailment, some kind of physical pain you experience. It could be a moral weakness, maybe a broken relationship, maybe persecution of some kind, a dream that has been unachieved. It could be a number of things. But take whatever it is in your own personal life and plug that into your thorn. And in essence, he's saying this thorn that God poked me with has a message behind it, because he's going to say there is something worse than suffering. And I know in my mind, it's like, what could possibly be worse than suffering? You think of the different kinds of sufferings there are. What could be worse than that? And he says, there is something worse. He gave me this message in order, notice what he says right at the top of verse 7, to keep me from becoming conceited. That there is something worse than suffering, and it's called sin. Sin is worse. And so if it's an element of taking suffering in order to save my soul, then how many of us would not willingly do that? But in the middle of the suffering, in the middle of looking at my weakness, sometimes it's hard to keep that in mind. And so God said, I have a message for you, Paul. I want you to recognize your weakness in order that you will not become conceited in all the other amazingly great things I gave you. Your speaking ability, your ability to witness to people, the world being changed by you, you seeing heaven, whatever that was, all these things could lead to conceit and pride and ultimately your own destruction. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a thorn, and this thorn is going to keep you from being conceited. And Paul's going to say, got your message loud and clear, God. I don't like it. Got your message. And he's going to pray three times. Lord, take this away from me. And I think in that sense, he's praying intensely and earnestly. He's like, Lord, I understand this. But he was praying a prayer of substitution. He's saying, God, substitute this bad thing in my life for a good thing. Take away my physical pain and give me health. Take away this broken relationship and give me restoration. Take away this moral weakness and give me strength. Replace it. Substitute it. And God says, yes, sometimes I do that. Sometimes I do substitute the bad things in your life for good things, but not today. I'm not going to do that today. And so he said, no, I have a second message for you, and I'm going to call this the message of sufficiency. He's going to say, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. And in a sense, he's saying, I'm not going to substitute the problems in your life. I'm not going to do a substitution. I'm going to do a transformation. I'm going to change you. I'm going to change your whole outlook on this thorn. I find it also interesting as like a side note. He said, God is the messenger, the message of the thorn. But who's the deliverer of this particular thorn? He says, Satan is the one who did this to me. And it's kind of nice to know that even in the worst things in my life, the things that we would look at and say, that's definitely satanic, God is still the one ultimately behind it all. God is the one who says, I'm using this thing in your life. And so, yes, Paul, I have substituted things in your life before. You wanted to be escaped from this city? I provided you that answer. There are other times you wanted to escape, you get stoned and left for dead. Sometimes he substitutes things in our lives, the bad for the good, but not always. A lot of times he transforms our own heart inside so that we look at the thorn in a totally different light. And that's what's going to happen here. So Paul was changed internally so that he could see this thorn as something that's going to further God's kingdom. It's going to bring God further glory. And so he can work with this thorn and not look at it as this thorn working against me. I don't think that happened overnight. He said he prayed three separate times for God to take this thing away, and God didn't. So I kind of get the point that he wrestled with this and wrestled with this and wrestled with this. And finally, he came to the place of saying, okay, God, I got the second message. You are not taking this away from me. You are leaving me with this ailment. You are leaving me with this depression. You are leaving me with this fill in the blank. But there's a reason why, and I trust in your sufficient grace. And so he says, because I understand this, I will boast in my weakness, because in my weakness, the world can be changed. And I will allow this weakness to be used in God's hands to further the kingdom. I think a great modern day example of this, Phil and I were talking, would be Johnny Erickson Tada. Okay, she's a young woman, you know, 19 years old, jumps off of a diving dock into some water, breaks her neck. In one way, most of us would say, I'd rather die than be paralyzed from the neck down. Most all of us, I think, would probably readily agree that that is one of the most devastating things that could happen to someone, especially you think of a teenager having a broken neck. And so from the age of 19 till now, she cannot move anything from her neck down, except she can do a little bit movement with her hand, but about this much, not much. And if you watch the movie Johnny, she's going to wrestle with that for years and years and years to say, God, why did you do this to me? Why did you allow this to happen? And people in her life would be telling her, Johnny, pray that God will heal you. Don't you think your relationship with God will be so much closer and you'll be able to reach so many people if he would heal you from this, and you'd be able to sit and stand up and walk around and say, God, heal me from a broken back, broken neck. I'm healed. I can walk now. Think about how close your relationship with God would be if he would do this. You would have a heart of thanksgiving that would impact you for the rest of your life if God healed you. Pray for that, Johnny. Pray for that. And for years and years, she did pray for that. She prayed for a substitution. Take my broken neck and give me health. But as we all know, Johnny Erickson Tada still cannot walk. God said, no, I have something greater in mind for you, Johnny. I want you to impact the world. Not only that, her own personal life with God. If you hear her talk, even on the radio, you can hear the joy in her voice. Joy that I don't think she would have if she would have been healed at the age of 21, 22, 23. Because of her weakness, because of her trial, She is stronger now than she was ever before. And her life is better now than it would have been if she would have been healed. And we believe that because all things work together for the good of those who love him. This is the best possible outcome for her. And she has joy. And so from her internal change, her internal transformation is going to flow a ministry that's impacting thousands, if not millions of lives the world round. God used her weakness, and she's going to boast in her weakness in order to see God's glory magnified in her life and in the lives of those around her. And so I look at that story and I say, man, that's humbling. I look at my own trials and I say, God, please substitute this. Please take this away and give me something else. I don't like it. And usually it's something way smaller. But yet Johnny Erickson Tana and Paul were able to look at the very things in their lives that they hated the most and wish were different and say, okay, here you go, God. Take it and use it. And I don't know how you're going to use it, but use it. And their lives in their own personal selves were changed because they can look at their trials not as something that's attacking me, but as something that God might want to use through me to reach the world. So again, I question you, what is your thorn? What is the thing in your life that you would remove if you could? And I would challenge you to think, maybe there's something different involved here that God would have for you than the removal of your thorn. And that's a super hard message. And I don't want you to think, walking away from this, that Johnny Erickson Tata, like, you know, every day's a piece of cake from here on out. I heard her speak maybe 5 years ago, and she said there are many mornings, several a week, where she wakes up in pain. Now, whether it's phantom pain or, you know, legitimate pain, however it works out with a paralysis, she wakes up in pain. And she says sometimes she'll sit there staring at her ceiling because she can't move, waiting for her nurse to come, and she'll pray, Lord, give me the grace to have a smile today that's real. Not a fake smile, but a real smile. To smile at people and to mean it. And she says there's never been a day where God has not answered that prayer. But it doesn't happen overnight, and it didn't happen quickly in her life. It took time. Just like it took time for Paul to come to grips with his thorn. And so I want to think through. Do we understand that in our weakness, God can be made strong and seem to be strong? That in things that I would never boast in, my weaknesses, that in those things God says, I want you to boast in those, not because your weaknesses are something to be proud of, but because in your weaknesses, my strength can be seen. And people will see something in you that they could not see any other way. If they saw just your strengths and you boasted in just those, they wouldn't think anything of it. But when you can boast in the things that you're weak in, the things you're ashamed of, the things that are trials and suffering in your life, then the world sees something that they've never seen before. And that's what's going to change lives. But weakness is not a prerequisite for power. I don't want you to think that it's like, okay, I trade my weakness and now I have power. Both exist simultaneously. One does not get taken away and replaced with the other. You have both. And I think there's no clearer picture of that than the cross of Jesus Christ. In the weakest moment of his life, physically, emotionally, spiritually separated from the Father on our behalf, he was at his weakest. But in his weakest, what was happening? The strongest force in my life was being broken. Sin in my life was being conquered. Power that I can't even begin to imagine was happening. That sin was being destroyed with a man on a cross in his weakness. It wasn't like his weakness wasn't there and power came over and he was like, you know, Superman or something like that. Both existed simultaneously. And the same is true for us. So weakness is a chance for God's power to be seen, not that it'll necessarily be taken away. Because God is still in the same business of taking our weakness and saying, I have something in mind for you personally and for the world in general. And I think a lot of times we have a tendency to forget that because we often want an explanation for why this, why that. But God says, you don't live by explanation. You live by faith. You live by faith in the promise, not in the explanation for the reasons why these things happened. Trust in my judgment to know that what's happening to you is for the best. So can we give God our fears? Can we give God our insecurities? Can we give God all the things that we think we need from other people and say, Lord, I boast in nothing but you, your cross, and your grace. I boast in nothing that I have. In fact, I boast in the things I don't even like in order that you may be glorified. I boast in nothing but the Lord. And that's what he's calling us to do. That's what he's calling us to do because he's saying there's a bigger power source that you have access to if you would choose but to grab it. We don't have to go through life as batteries, trying to live life in our own energy. which we know eventually is going to drain us. You've seen, we probably either have experienced or seen others who've gone through life and come to the point of where they just burned out and snapped and couldn't do it anymore. He's saying, I have something greater. And we trust the God who says, I can take the suffering and I can take the success and I can blend them together in perfect unity. Because like a pharmacist who can take two things that if left to themselves only would be ultimately destructive to you, they can take these two poisons in a sense and combine them into something that's good for you. If God gave you only success, that would lead to conceit and ultimately your destruction. If he gave you only suffering, you might break under the pressure. You wouldn't be able to handle it. So can we trust that the suffering and the success God is going to bring together for our good? And that's ultimately going to be the best possible answer to any question we would have. Again, we might not get the explanation, but we do get the promise. We do get what God says, this is what I'm going to do. And it's going to be for our best if we would choose but to believe. So let's walk this life with our eyes fixed on the author and the perfecter of our faith, knowing that everything that happens to us, both the successes and the sufferings, our strengths and our things we would boast in, and even our very weaknesses, that he's bringing them together for his glory. And if we can keep our eyes on that, then that makes the suffering and the thorns in this life so much more doable, because we know God is using them even in spite of ourselves sometimes. So let's close in prayer and we'll do something else. Dismiss maybe. I don't know. Lord, I thank you for this day. Lord, I thank you that Paul was open with us in 2 Corinthians, that he shared the things in his life that he was ashamed of. And though he didn't give us specifics, Lord, we know that whatever it was used by you, that your grace was sufficient, and that he could boast in his weakness because of you. And though, Lord, I know my own weaknesses, I sometimes look at them and say, there's no possible way you can use this for your glory. There's no way that this is something I'd ever want to talk about. And yet, if your word is true, if what you say is real, then in those very things are the things you want to change the most in me. That you would cause me to know you more through it. So Lord, as we think through our thorns, we think through the things that we would boast in, Lord, may we find our significance in you. May we find our security in you. And even in the things we don't like, may we hand those over to you and know that you will take them and you will further your kingdom through them, and you will cause us to know you and love you and find joy in you more through it. So Lord, change us, transform us. May we become more and more like your Son, who in perfect weakness demonstrated the greatest power ever. So Lord, I thank you for those things that Paul shared with us, Lord. May we take it and apply it to our lives. May it not just go in one ear and out the other. I pray these things in your name.